This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
A pair of late penalties in Reykjavik. And he's missed it, Bjarnason in England. Should get the win now. Manager not pleased.
Whatever you think of the penalty award, and just loses his composure here.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast, your antidote to the pandemic of clickbait. I'm David Michael, your host and editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me for an episode that finally has talk on a new signing, Mr. Chris Budd, welcome.
Hello.
And Mr. Phil Shaw, welcome back.
Hello.
It's finally happened. Villa have somebody holding up a shirt. And I mean, to be honest, I'm not one of these goons that's refreshing Twitter every 5 minutes to see if we've signed anybody. I mean, I actually took a week off to visit my sister for a birthday and managed to come back and still we hadn't signed anybody. They actually waited until the next day. But anyway, we will talk about that later on. Have you been up to anything interesting recently? Have you caught All or Nothing, the Spurs version of that show?
Yeah, I've watched the first three.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, clearly Jose knew that there was a documentary crew there before he took a Spurs job.
Yeah, he loves it, doesn't he?
Yeah. Do you think that was part of the deal of him taking the job, probably? But he is the reason why you're watching it. I mean, that's my point of view of why I've watched it anyway.
You can go for stats. That's the way people that don't understand football analyze football, is with stats.
I mean, I'm getting pretty bored of all the hand slapping from the players every 5 minutes and shaking hands every time they walk into any room.
Well, if there's one good thing about COVID-19, it's put an end to all of that bloody high-fiving Spurs nonsense.
Constantly, though. Jesus Christ. Oh, well done, Delhi. You finished all your lunch. Fuck off.
Oh, well done. You managed not to have any spillage at the urinal.
At least you don't need a degree in physics and other things to take instruction from them compared to the Man City one. Jose doesn't come out with a whiteboard and try and reinvent the right back.
Yeah. No, in all seriousness, though, it is quite interesting to see Jose, or it's Jose as he prefers to be called, his sort of man management. And you can sort of see how in other clubs he's been in, how, you know, if you're, you know, one of his favourites, he is going to get the best out of you. But I think it's, you know, if you're not in the team, he's going
to
tell you.
He essentially said, if you are trying 100%, then you've got nothing to worry about, really.
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing so far is the players who were on the, A, on the fringe, like your Eric Dyers, and B, Christian Eriksen, who obviously, you know, ended up moving on. But just seeing what it's like when you're playing in the, you know, such a team, and actually you've already come out and declared that you want out of there, and the new manager's come in, and the new manager in Daniel Levy saying, is any chance of turning and changing his mind? And Eriksen's just like, no.
Or Eric Dyer being hooked after half an hour and just sitting like the world has ended in the dressing room. Been there, Eric. It's all right. Don't worry about it.
And then Mourinho saying, yeah, I've just stabbed him in the back. And so I might as well start him in the next game just for the family. But yeah, is it a good season to, I think it is a kind of a good season because it's after after that Champions League thing. I mean, you know, what they did to Ajax and how they beat them dramatically in the last seconds. Then get to the final and actually not even turn up for it. The process of getting there again, getting to the very heights. This is also a similar team that came runners up to Leicester as well. So they've had that double whammy of failure. And so I suppose it is an interesting time to how can you resuscitate that team?
Well, it's a manager coming in and trying to instill a new kind of essentially a winning culture, isn't it? Because they've got good individual players and they've shiny new stadium and all the pieces in the puzzle are there. They just don't quite fit together at the moment. So it'll be an interesting one to sort of see. Although I'm not particularly looking forward to seeing reruns of Engel's mistake at Villa Park and Son running away to score.
Yeah, Son comes across really well, actually. He's a very likeable chap.
Yeah, his English is brilliant, isn't it, for a Korean? I'm interested to see. I doubt they will, but I'd be interested to know if they follow him to Korea because obviously I think it was early in the COVID he took his national service, didn't he? Apparently, because he had to do it at some point, and the club said, this is the perfect time to do it. And you have to do fitness stuff there anyway. And apparently, you got the highest scores ever in the Korean army for fitness, which is a bit of an unfair advantage when you've got the world's best sports scientists helping you.
Anyway, welcome to the Spurs podcast.
Yeah, welcome to the Fighting Cock.
Right, coming up in the show, we will look at the latest Villa news. We have a new signing. We have a player leaving the club. We have a captain who's managed to sneak into that England team. We have news of Villa actually kicking balls against other teams in friendlies. And the TV games, and then the controversial situation of currently, at the time of recording, there are certain games that Villa fans will be able to watch when Villa play. We also look at Manchester City's football group as they buy up yet another club. We look at the Premier League losing a territory as China drops out, and then we'll discuss Mr. Maddie Cash in more detail and look at some of the other targets currently bubbling under. And then in Over and Under, let's keep a right back theme. We will look at Mr. Gary Charles and Mr. Luke Young as well. Right, let's get back to Son. Villa news, first signing, we won't dwell on it too much here. We'll talk about it a little later on, but Matty Cash is in through as the first Villa signing of this summer transfer window for 14 million and rising. Obviously, add-ons that include probably England appearances, Villa appearances, and so forth. Going out the other way and probably factored in because he left before Matty Cash came in, James Bree, whose transfer fee, although a lot less than Cash's, would have been taken into consideration by Villa when they made their bid for Cash. He joins Luton Town. Also, Mr. Jack Grealish benefited from, was it Winks and Rashford that pulled out of the England squad?
Yes, yep.
So now he gets the chance to prove himself. Now security have finally let him through the gates because he turned up at St. George's Park and the security wondered who he was, and he had a bit of I think it's 5 minutes to get in because they were questioning whether he was an under-21s player. But now he's in, opportunity knocks, and essentially it doesn't really matter how, Grealish obviously just got in because players pulled out, but this always happens, and it doesn't matter how Grealish got in. He's through the door now, and there's a big chance for him to make an impression firsthand to Southgate. If Villa were playing Manchester City on the first game, you'd have kind of, from a Villa point of view, mixed feelings a little bit, but the good news is because that game's postponed, Grealish will return and still have a full week with Villa to get ready for the first game of the season. He was on the bench against Iceland, but didn't get on. Maybe he'll get some minutes against Denmark.
He was probably falling asleep, wasn't he, on the bench? It was such a bad game.
It looks like that knock isn't anything major, or else he wouldn't have been on the bench.
No, he was training with quite a heavy calf strap, wasn't he?
Yeah, ultimately, though, it was Birkir Bjarnason who made more of a, had more influence on the England win than Grealish in the end.
Yeah, of all the talk sort of being about Grealish being in the squad, and then obviously the other Villa involvement being Mings, and all of a sudden it was, you know, Villa.
Ex-Villa.
Yeah, ex-Villa also ran, shall we say.
I thought you was going to say ex-Villa of royalty.
No, very much the opposite, actually. I was you know, I had the chance to level the game and ballooned it, which is weird considering he virtually passed it over the bar. He tried to place it. Oh, well. It summed up the level of the game, really. It was poor.
I mean, opportunity always knocks in strange ways. I mean, the England team has turned to the better because of injuries or people pulling out. You know, David Platt really got his chance because Brian Robson.
He was basically trying to be a dick and tipped the bed up on Paul Gascoigne, and the bed landed and ripped his toenail off, and that was how David Platt got into the England team.
How he started.
Yeah, how he got his starting place against Cameroon.
Meanwhile, Villa have, almost like under the cover of night, had three friendlies. You know, other teams have been screening their... Spurs screened their three friendlies that they played at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium free to members, but Villa have been literally behind closed doors in their 1-1 draw with Bristol City. I think it was two games in 60 minutes, wasn't it? And Samatta scored in that, and then there was a more conventional 90-minute run out against Wickham, which ended 5-2. It's 3-1 at half time. El Ghazi scored two. Nealon saved a penalty. And Samatta
scored with his feet, apparently.
I don't believe that.
No. I mean, I think they weren't screened, I believe, just because they were both played at training grounds as opposed to at actual stadiums. So.
Yeah. And Konsa and Trezeguet were also.
Well, Trezeguet always scores, doesn't he? That's what we're going to get bored of talking about that soon.
Yeah, well, hopefully. And then the third and final friendly that they've played, well, not final, I think they have Manchester United lined up, is that?
Apparently so, yes.
Hearsay.
So, yeah.
But they went to the Emirates and won 3-2, which was pretty good considering there was no Grealish, Mings, Hourihane, McGinn. Arsenal were debuting Willian and had their top man up front as well, who bagged two.
Yeah, and young Ramsey got a couple of goals, didn't he, as well, which will do his hype no harm.
Douglas Luiz opened the scoring. Aubameyang equalised. Ramsey made it 2-1. Aubameyang scored again, and then Ramsey popped up again for the winner. I noticed there wasn't much info of this game going about. It was, I think, Arsenal put out a final score. There was a journalist at the game putting out a couple of details, but it didn't stop the... I think Birmingham Mail put out reports, and you're thinking, oh, a match report. At least somebody was at the game. So
definitive word.
No, that's another outlet that says that. But you know, you're just thinking, well, normally the local newspaper does cover all the friendlies, and actually, you know, if they go on the tour, covers that as well. And the whole article was literally just from the two tweets that pretty much everybody saw. So no report in reality.
And there's no like leaked videos or anything, which you sometimes get, don't you, as well?
Yeah, Villa's finest moment for the last 5 years, and there's no evidence that it actually happened. It was the result that really should have happened at the Emirates in the league. I mean, I've said this on social media.
Yeah, that was the game that got away, wasn't it, last year?
Yeah, hey ho! But still, it's something that'll give a bit of confidence for the lads, knowing that they don't need Grealish or Mings or Hourihane or McGinn to get results in difficult away trips.
Hashtag strength in depth.
The League Cup apparently is still going. Who have we got in the next round? The draw has been made.
Our campaign this season starts at Burton Albion, nice and close to home, and then we get the winner of Bristol City or Northampton. That'll be away from home as well.
We should be through to round four, you would hope. We never know with Villa nowadays, but who knows, we may be off to get our bye to the semi-final like we did last season.
Yeah, the annual bye.
Yeah.
Against everyone's reserve teams.
In terms of Villa TV action, they have Fulham confirmed on Sky, and Amazon will screen two of their Christmas period games against Burnley, and then the one after Christmas against Chelsea. Speaking of which, 3 points. First point is currently there's a bit of a protest going on that started off as Football Supporters Association lobbying some key MPs and shadow ministers and the sports minister regarding the fact that, I think it's #letterswatch, the fact that because of a lot of these games being behind closed doors, before a percentage of fans are let into a stadium, there'll be games that will be slipping through which fans won't be able to actually see in the flesh or on TV, which really demotes the role of the fan to, you know, bottom of the pile. And I think that's Villa's game against Sheffield United. You won't be able to watch that legally. They don't screen games at 3 o'clock to obviously protect the match going fans, especially lower leagues, and, you know, make sure attendances are unaffected there. You're in a position where no fans are watching the game. So this is real football with no fans, because you don't even get to legally see them on TV. I mean, what do you think about this?
Yeah, as you said, it's the legally thing, isn't it? Because all the fans now are just going to be scrambling around on Twitter for foreign streams and stuff.
We wouldn't do that, would we?
Why not? You know, why not just do it through, you know, a higher quality, more stable, legitimate way? You know, if the club can do it through their own channels, why not do that? I don't. It's just the Premier League being, I don't know, is it greedy? Is it obstructive? I don't know what is to gain by not letting fans not watch their team. At some point, they will just start to lose fans. You know, younger fans will go, fuck this, I'm going to go and play Fortnite. I can't be arsed with football anymore.
Well, the EFL are actually rolling it out, so you can buy a game for £10 a pop, which is, you know, pretty pricey, but still it's demand and supply, isn't it? The way they win is £10 to pay-per-view for a game. Compare it to the, you know, the iFollow of the EFL, where it was like £6 or £5 even. This is how they get you. You know, you'll hear a fan say, oh, well, you know, tickets are like £30, so, you know, £10 is all right. I mean, there's a big difference between going to the game and seeing something on TV that actually you can get for free on TV.
Yeah, but in context, if you have to pay to watch every Villa game at £10 a pop, you're spending £380. You can watch West Ham in the stadium for cheaper than that for an adult season ticket.
Can you?
Yep.
With binoculars?
Yeah. £270. They've got one of the cheapest season tickets, haven't they, in the league?
Yeah, with binoculars and blindfold, probably. that would help. But when we talk about the Premier League, there are 20 stakeholders in the Premier League, and one of those is Aston Villa. Premier League is owned by, you know, the teams that are actually in it, and they
It's owned by Man City,
and they get to vote on all these issues. So they did have a meeting on the day we recorded this podcast, and apparently they haven't voted on it yet, but it's starting to lean towards actually doing something in terms of supplying the capabilities of watching these games that may change once fans are allowed back in, even if it's just like 30% of the stadium's capacity. But we'll see what happens. I mean, Brighton actually staged a test event in their friendly against Chelsea, which I think finished 1-1, where 2,500 fans were allowed in. I mean, meanwhile, Villa, after that game took place, we finally got our first email from the club regarding fan consultation, regarding the prospect of fans coming in. But, I mean, this consultation, that email saying why Villa had delayed doing anything should have been made ages ago. And, you know, they put out a survey. I'm still unsure who exactly it's gone to. Some season ticket holders,
yeah, I got it, but I don't know who. Some have got it, some haven't.
Yeah, I got it, but then you got season ticket holders who are saying you know, they haven't received it. So, you know, it would have been nice for Aston Villa supporter fan consultation group to actually have an email saying, yeah, we're sending out a survey, anything you want including in it, any ideas for it, and by the way, we're going to send it to, you know, either a 5,000 fan case study, or, you know, all the season ticket holders, or, you know, or just so when people ask you who it's been sent to, you can actually say. Because when I've put out Facebook posts or whatever saying, you know, how did you find the survey, a lot of fans are saying, well, I'm a season ticket holder and I haven't received it. So at least you could tell them who it's actually gone to. Anyway, maybe it's just a box ticking exercise. We will find out.
I'd imagine
out.
So some of the options that were in there were very sort of bit stunk of the usual Villa thing of, this is what we're going to do, what do you think? But either way, we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, and this is the whole idea. A supporter consultation, structured dialogue, as the governments have ordained it and the Premier League are actually supportive of, should be, you know, it should be a meshed thing. It's not like an afterthought. It's not a box-ticking exercise. Your supporters are there, and, you know, we give consultation through knowledge of following the club that a lot of people who are just working there and have worked there for 1 or 2 years and have no real context of the club are making decisions, and they're missing out on the opportunity having, you know, of just another pair of eyes, another pair of ears of, you know, consultation. Whether they act upon anything we say is another matter, but at least they've done their due diligence. But it seems to be very much like a box ticking exercise at the moment and an afterthought. Anyway, moving on. Point number two, the City Football Group, who it's basically Manchester City, isn't it? Have added a tenth team to their conglomerate. French club Troyes, who you remember back in Villa's Intertoto Cup days, they actually also won the Intertoto Cup back in 2001. And even though they're in Liga 2, I mean, they've been in the top tier. They've had their time there. So this adds to a group of clubs. They've got Melbourne City as well as New York City. So that's Australia, US. There's the Marinos in Japan. They've got a Uruguayan team. They've got Girona in Spain. They've got a Chinese team. They've got an Indian team, Mumbai City. And they've also got a Belgium team as well. What happened to Villa's empire building? Because I remember having a meeting with Wynas, and it was also got into the press that they were going to hook up with a Danish team and another team. I can't remember.
This was all part of Steve Round's Villa engine, wasn't it? It never ended up happening.
No, it's not something to do with the engine. The engine was the way of playing. This was like building an infrastructure to take academy players and create breeding grounds, but also create potential clubs that academy players could go out on loan to as well. So it's this kind of self-supporting ecosystem.
We could have sent Henry Lansbury to Denmark.
Exactly. But
they love top knots over there as well.
And, you know, this is something that you may have seen in the structuring of this alleged Messi deal, where Manchester City are saying, you know, you play 3 years at Manchester City and then you go to New York City. So you can actually use your empire of clubs to structure deals like that. But it's, I don't know, it's pretty scary, the way Manchester City have, you know, created an ecosystem where they will remain top dogs because they are, you know, they've got so much money and so much infrastructure now that it's just, it's not even sport anymore.
Well, yeah, it's like conglomerate level business, isn't it? It's just like carpet bombing the entire global football economy. They're going to have dominant forces in multiple markets, and that will, you would think, I mean, they're already obviously, you know, a very established team in this country, and, you know, I think New York City are getting that way in America. I know they're very much not top dog over there yet, but they're, you know, because they've got, you know, geography on their side, they can put players through that system, and if they can do the same in other countries, they'll have something that so many other teams just cannot do.
Yeah, the worst of it is, I mean, City can just pick a team out of that group that, I mean, say they have a player like Douglas Luiz, right, we need to maybe toughen him up a bit, he needs to experience a relegation battle, we'll send him to Girona because they're struggling, and he'll get a season there and he'll get those skills, so everything just makes City stronger, just send him out to the team that'll give him the skill that he needs.
Why do they need to send him to Girona to get relegation battle skills? Point number three, we've mentioned Premier League TV rights before in the context of the Newcastle United failed takeover. In that case, it was Saudi Arabia. After not paying an installment, so I think it was 160 million. I think that was due back in March because of COVID. In terms of the product without fans, I'm guessing is the main reason. The Premier League has pretty much ripped up their contract with the Chinese, is it PP Sports, who are actually owned by somebody else, who have a £564 million package for live rights up until 2022. But I think they've been slowly relegating the coverage to like back burner channels and less off-peak times. So I think the main decision is financial, but I don't know if politically Premier League was starting to be kind of swept under the carpet a little over there. So it'll be interesting to see if the Premier League can get a deal in China that's anywhere close to what they had with PP Sports.
Yeah, there was a bit of a rumour, wasn't there, that this was a Chinese government response to the Huawei, however you pronounce the phone company deal that had obviously been pulled off them, and all the sort of 5G saga as well.
The Premier League have kind of insisted that isn't the case.
Yeah, the Premier League will want, you know, rights to be in China. They, you know, whether they like it or not, it is one of the biggest emerging markets, and they're still an economic powerhouse. So it's like, if there's money to be made, they're going to have to do it. You know, in a time when fans aren't in the stadiums and the potential sort of Premier League utopia is, you know, under threat, they don't want to be pulling TV rights, you know, 2 weeks before the season.
And it's one of the bigger packages, judging by the amount as well. It all has a knock-on effect potentially to, you know, the lower down in the pyramid. If the Premier League said, right, we have to tighten our belts, so we can't, you know, allow these, you know, XYZ payments to trickle down the tree to clubs at the bottom who already rely on gate receipts, and they've been shut down as revenue streams. So if the Premier League decides to tighten its belt in terms of where its money goes, then you're looking at increasing chances of crisis clubs.
Yeah, and it's been described already as like a financial black hole that the Premier League have to quickly sort of fill. So you wonder how would this sort of play on the financial fair play? It's already been relaxed for, or sort of reaccounted for, a couple of years there. I mean, if you're budgeting and you're expecting this money coming in and suddenly it disappears, I mean, what do they do?
No, exactly. The overall financial structure of the Premier League is, you know, starting to look a little bit precarious. I mean, I think Dan, last time he was on this show about 3 years ago, said there was always going to be like this tipping point, and he thought it had come, and I mean, it just couldn't keep going on and on and on, and then, you know, throw in a pandemic and it's only going to accelerate the situation. Right, before we chat about Mr. Matty Cash and co in more detail, just want to give a quick shout out and big thank you to the My Old Man Said patrons who keep this show rocking and rolling. If you want to join as a My Old Man Said patron and get extra shows, info, and most of all also join Match Club, which will be firing up in all its glory very soon as we approach the start of the 2021 season. I didn't do any shout outs in the bonus podcast, so there's a few here who have joined us in the last week or so. Thank you very much to Daniel Gold, Matt Birchman, Jim Lynch, Daniel Berwick, James, I don't know your surname, Joe Peters, Billy Bud Sims, Chris Ballard, Dane Bertelson, Paul Bryant, Dick Sutton, Alex Mack. Also, now you can actually pay an annual subscription to be a My Old Man Said patron and actually save 15%, which is, you know, basically 2 months, I think it works out to be. That's an offer that will probably drop in a few weeks or so. So now is a good time. Thank you very much to Tony Parton, Alex, again, I don't know your surname, Alexi Macchris, and Paul Bryant as well. And thank you very much to Matthew Minshall for upgrading as well. Please go to myomansaid.com and click on the Patreon link if you're interested in supporting the show and getting access to the extras. In terms of Match Club, Mr. Bird, how do you fancy doing something for the England game on Tuesday night?
Well, we can keep an eye on Superjack, can't we?
So if you're listening in time, that is, I'll put out an announcement in Match Club. So we'll do a little warm-up session and
hopefully a bit of pre-season for everyone, just get everyone Match Club fit.
Hopefully Mr. Grealish gets on the pitch as well to add an extra dimension and interest. So join us there.
To take your opportunity to come on and say how harsh we were.
Yeah. Right, main bit of the show, new signing. We're finally talking about an incoming player to hopefully improve us. Phil, what's your first impressions on Matty Cash?
Well, first impressions on Cash, and I have to say on Lang as well. Have you seen the photo? Johan Lang has a demonic grin on his face whenever he's presenting Matty Cash. So he's either been up all night working and he's full of caffeine in this, or he's just really excited to get his first sort of purchase over the line. But in all seriousness, Cash looks like the sort of player that is very much what Smith wants. He looks like he's just going to run all day, and he's obviously going to add competition for Freddie Gilbert and El Mohammadi. But I'm more interested to see if I finally get my dream of two fullbacks in each wing playing. so he might be a right wing option as well.
Yeah, I mean, to give you a bit of context on Cash, he's played less than half of games for Forest over the last few years in the position of right back. So it was only really the season just gone that he actually made the switch. Although under Mark Warburton about 3 years ago, that's when he actually did play a few games at fullback. So that's when the idea kind of germinated. The current Forest manager, Lamouchi, is it Lamouchi? I can't pronounce it. Obviously, has got wind of that and played him there, basically re-established him as a right back. And it's from what Howe Smith has spoken about him since he signed, it is in reference of being a fullback. You know, there's this 2 and 2 plus 5 rumours that Gilbert is on his way out, but I don't believe that for 1 second. People forget that you need a squad at this level. And with Elmo, he's in his last season, is he not, in terms of his contract?
Yeah,
so,
last year, yeah.
And Gilbert showed enough last season to have the minerals to play right back for Villa. So he will give Cash some competition there for sure. Who knows, he'd probably start off the season in the right back spot. I mean, if you look back to how Smith started the previous season, where Elmo and Taylor turned up in the first game against Spurs when everybody was expecting the new signings, you know, straight in. So you may have a situation where if El Ghazi or Trezeguet or any new transfer player isn't working out, then Cash could play in front of Gilbert. So you've got two of the fastest Villa players down that right flank. So it could be an interesting option if you wanted to go for a bit more direct speed as well.
I mean, I like him. I've asked a pal of mine who works at BBC Nottingham and they love him up there. I mean, it's always a really good sort of sign when you buy a player and you know, his former team and their supporters are, you know, obviously sad to see him go, but they also have nothing but good things to say. You know, sometimes you get players and they're like, oh yeah, you know, we're better off without him, or good riddance, or whatever it may be. It seems to be, you know, universal across the Forest, you know, fan base that, you know, he was deservedly the fans' player of the year, the players' player of the year, you know, one of the best rated players in the Championship last season. Apparently he's sort of cut from the same mould as like a McGinn, as Phil said. You know, he runs all day, he'll give you that sort of energy. He loves it. It looks like he loves doing all the dirty things as well. You know, he loves to tackle and get stuck in. He's got that little bit of needle about him, which I really like, and he can score goals. So, as you said, I think he's going to be a general right-hand side option. I think I tweeted earlier that I think all of a sudden, you look at the way Villa are playing with him, you potentially have other options to kind of go like three at the back, play wing backs and push him into midfield, or play him almost potentially someone like an El Ghazi might be kind of bricking himself a bit now, thinking, oh, actually, I've got, you know, if Trezeguet's in the team and he's scoring goals and can play on maybe on the left, and Cash can play on the right, all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, what we discussed about Grealish maybe having to move into the middle of the park and run the game and play as a, you know, a number 8 or a number 10 rather than as a wide man. It just gives you some other options in how you want to set the team up, which I think is important, you know, because I mean, Smith, we mentioned before about Smith that in the last sort of 4 games of the season, he showed that he could come up with a plan B or a plan C and that kind of in-game management and change the setup. And I think that'll be important next season, where, you know, teams have had a bit of a look at us now and they know, okay, this is how Villa look like they might be setting themselves up.
What I've seen of him, one thing is, you know, you can easily find clips where he's scored his, you know, how many goals he scored for Forest in total. You know, I think it's just crawled into double figures, and it's easy to condense all the clips of these players down. But you know, when you look, let's say, between the lines, things I've noticed, you know, he can tackle and he's pretty good, you know, when facing a one-on-one. But also he's got delivery with his left foot as well as his right, which, I mean, for, you know, 14 plus million, you'd expect a player to be able to deliver with his left as well. But, you know, increasingly in this game, a lot of players are one-footed predominantly. But he seems to be, you know, pretty two-footed. But as you said, the main plus is the kind of dynamoism and his attitude. He's got kind of an effervescent, positive. He will bring an intensity which Villa needs, but also his pace as well is a you know, genuine asset to the team that's looking to inject pace throughout the first 11.
And probably, you know, another sort of likable personality that the fans can buy into, hopefully, in the same mould as a McGinn, whereas there was a few players who we bought last year who, even though they had sort of good moments or bad moments, the fans just, they didn't really buy into them. I think of someone like a Trezeguet or like El Ghazi, you know, the fans, they, you know, they might rate them or not, but they don't tend to have an affinity with them. With someone like Matty Cash, you think if he's thundering into tackles and it's, you know, blood and thunder football. It's, that's the kind of stuff, you know, you just refer back to like an Alan Hutton, although he looks, you know, far more technically adept than Alan Hutton, but it's that kind of personality that the fans are, you know, he'll give you 100% every week. And even if he's having a bad game, he'll hopefully make up for what he lacks in technical ability and, you know, legs and heart and all that stuff. And there's a lot to be said for that when you're, you know, the reality is, you know, we're not a, you know, challenging for the Champions League or a team that are going to be winning every week. You know, you need that sort of personality. I just hope we don't put too much pressure on him thinking he's going to come in and absolutely transform the side from the off. I think he might take a little bit of time just to grow into the Premier League and the change of pace and stuff.
So he's 23, so there's the first clue. He is, you know, very much one to, you know, slot in with your Konzas, with your Louises.
He's up and running now, isn't he? He's not a kid.
Yeah. As players that will grow, you know, with Grealish, if it's often said that Villa are building a team around Grealish, well, these are the types of players that you would hope Villa would get in and then build with them. I mean, people have raised eyebrows at the actual fee. I think Villa went in a lot lower. I mean, they definitely went in for 10 million. Maybe they've tried an 8 before that, but you've got to remember that, you know, and Forrest would have known this. Forrest obviously know who our owners are. They obviously know that we bought Matt Target for, you know, 11.5 plus add-ons. So it was always going to be a figure there or there bounce. So in terms of the fee, just quickly, it's pretty much similar to the Matt Doherty of Wolves to Spurs, which there's no way he would have gone to Villa from Wolves. That's for starters. But it's... I mean, I don't know how many years he had left on his contract, but that's good business, or Matty Cash is actually very highly regarded.
I think it's a savvy bit of business by Spurs. You know, he's obviously had a couple of seasons, or a couple of good seasons, you know, in a very good Wolves team. So
how do you think it compares, though, to Cash? I mean, who's getting the better deal there? We don't really know.
I think the fact that the agent, you know, obviously got Mr. Mendes in the middle of that deal, you know, who's representing basically all parties, isn't he? I think he's Mourinho's agent, he's Nuno's agent, and he's the player's agent, and he's on the Wolves board. So it kind of works out for everyone. I think it's probably a very easy move for all parties.
Yeah.
In terms of like value, I mean, it's to be decided, isn't it? Matty Cash could burst onto the scene, as we all hope he does. You know, Doherty could have peaked. You know, who knows? We shall see, I suppose. It'll be, you know, to be determined.
Indeed. Going out the other way was James Bree, as we mentioned at the top of the show. But he's somebody that, I mean, this is a cautionary tale almost, because he came in as like muted as one of the best young fullbacks in the Championship, if not England. And we had high hopes of him being somebody who could get forward and was useful getting forward as an attacking fullback. But that one, you know, didn't actually play out, did it?
No, he just never... For whatever reason, it just never worked out for him. It's, you know, he arrived with the best intentions, I'm sure. But, it, you know, the fact that, you know, he'd only been there a few months, and then Bruce went out in the summer and bought El Mohammedi kind of probably, you know, spoke for itself at the time.
Because Bruce Bruce had seen him a few times when before he bought him. So he obviously had his eye on him, and he spoke, you know, very highly of him when he actually signed him.
I think because he was relatively cheap, you could sort of take a bit of a punt on a young player. Whereas in hindsight, Bree looks back now and thinks, actually, I probably should have stayed where I was for the time being and where I was playing every week, and I would have continued my development.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't help him that when he did sign and he was at Bodymore Heath, one of the first people to welcome him to the club was me. When he was introduced to us, as we had a fan consultation group meeting with Steve Bruce, and they brought James Bree in to say hello. So we, you know, we all shook his hand and, you know, wished him the best and had a chat, and it was probably put him off.
it was downhill from there.
No, we haven't had a good record with sort of young British-based fullbacks. I mean, I'm thinking Joe Bennett as well. He came in and say no more about him. Couldn't do worse.
That's not.
And on a positive note, in terms, I mean, Villa have got a bit of history with converted wingers. I mean, back in the 70s, before my time, John Gidman became one of the great Villa right backs after transitioning. And more famously, for a generation in front of that, Mr. Kenny Swain, who started off as a winger. Ironically, started off at Wickham, where Matty Cash also started off. But Kenny Swain transitioned from a winger to a right back, and a right back that won a league title and European Cup with Villa. So this is what we're holding on for. Forget about your Joe Bennetts and your James Bree. We're looking for the new Kenny Swain. Kenny Swain actually moved from Villa to Forest as well, so the other way round from what Matty Cash did.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
But I think the player's attitude, and he's got this directness, and he's not afraid to have a shot. And he technically, he's a pretty good shot as well. Could be a live wire purchase. And I think it's a case of, I think I mentioned in a previous show, it's like that NFL mentality in the draft where he may not be your priority, but if it's if the best player is available, you take him. And I think in terms of right backs, we spoke a lot about Smith. If Villa were going to improve last season, one of the key areas was to upgrade the fullback position, which he bought in two new fullbacks, but I don't think we improved as much as Smith thought he was going to in that department, because it didn't really add much to us going forward, which is the whole ethos of getting decent attacking fullbacks. And there's no coincidence that Mehdi Kaş started as an attacking wide player and transitioned, and that's kind of perked Smith's interest. I mean, you just look at the best two teams at the moment, and you look at the caliber of their fullbacks and what their fullbacks do. And, go back a few seasons to Spurs' best team in the last 5 years or so, when they finished second to Leicester. I think they had Kyle Walker and Rose on their fullback positions, with pace to burn. And it does add an extra dimension to your attacking play. So hopefully Kaş can improve us in that respect, because I don't think we improved as much as we were hoping for in that department last season.
I just hope he's a player who settles in, reasonably quickly, which from the reports you see, he seems to have the kind of personality where he'll slot in. In terms of he's at upheaval, he's only like an hour away from where he's been living in Nottingham anyway, so it shouldn't be too big a transition. I think he'll be one of those who can arrive and kind of hit the ground running.
Our level of fullback it's not more than a seven at the moment anyway, before he came in. So I think it is definitely a room for improvement situation. And as we said, there's no room for sentiments if you can improve the first 11.
And also, if him arriving gives Gilbert a kick up the arse and Gilbert gets that shirt and makes it his own, so be it as well.
No, exactly. This is what you need, genuine competition. I mean, it also, as you said earlier on, it might give El Ghazi a kick up the back seat as well.
That'll be him out for a few months if you do that. No, but another thing is, I mean, people online especially, people are getting a bit sort of twitchy about the lack of transfer activity. But if Villa are going to be doing their shopping in the domestic market, which it looks like they are going to be doing, these players are already back with their clubs. They're already doing pre-season training. It's not going to be your Douglas Luiz situation where he just steps off the plane and has to go onto the pitch. They're going to have a pre-season in them. The only thing is, you're going to have to get them up to speed tactically, but tactics hopefully aren't as hard to teach there as fitness.
Yeah, I mean, you've also got a situation now that, one of our favourite stomping grounds, the French League. If we bought a French player now, you're looking at, 2 week quarantine period.
Yeah, so
in most cases. So that is the lay of the land. Looking at other things that have been happening, Sergio Romero, the Manchester United goalkeeper, who would be third string at the moment, I would say.
Yeah.
If he stayed a United
goalkeeper.
Yeah, he's
only been playing in the Cups in Europe, hasn't he?
Yeah, I haven't really seen much of him to make a real opinion. There's, people bring out stats of, 30-odd clean sheets out of 60-odd games, but, the context of those games are mostly Cup games.
Yeah, it's over five seasons as well, so 60 games over five seasons isn't a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the reports of the price go anywhere from about 6 million to 10. I don't think I would be going 10 million for him.
He has played in the World Cup final.
There is that. Okay, add on another couple of million then for that.
No, in all seriousness, he looks solid if on spectacular. I mean, I don't think he's going to be, he might not pull out the sort of wonder saves that Heaton does, but equally, I think he is going to come for crosses. And looking at sort of United chat about him, he does seem to communicate well with the back four, which is sort of what we saw Pepe Reina brought to the team. So I think it would probably be a smart move if we can get rid of a couple of our keepers, because we don't need five in the books.
No, exactly. I think if you get him for 8 million, nobody's going to be grumbling about that. Where's Kalinic going?
He's hard to get off the wage bill.
Yeah, this is a
bit
of a...
And he wasn't cheap when we bought him, so they're going to make a huge loss on him, I would have thought.
Yeah, Nieland, I don't know. It's the same situation. It's like these are stones around our neck, I think.
Yeah, I mean, someone like Steer, I think, is easy. You could probably loan him with the view to buy in a year's time, and he may take that deal, and there'll be... I'm sure that we will see in the next few weeks up until the transfer window quite a few sort of loan deals being done last minute by Championship, League One sides, whereas at the moment it seems like quite a, as we predicted, a very stagnant market other than, Chelsea going ballistic.
Yeah, the main mooted signing, and he's been left out the last, three Brentford pre-season games, Ollie Watkins, seems to be like a deal that's going to happen. It just seems to be a matter of price, which is holding it back. Brentford did sign the replacements this week. Ivan Toney from Peterborough, so that's in place. That stalled for a week or so, I think, over the price Brentford had their initial approaches rejected. So there's nothing really in the way now apart from personal terms and the price, and that could be done by the time you listen to this podcast. So we will see what happens there. Although, when you look around, when you Google his name, there's stories after him from about five clubs. It's almost like this. He's got his own clickbait cottage industry going. Benrahma, what do you think is happening there?
I think Benrahma will miss out on in the end, just because I think Smith would probably like him. I think he'll probably get priced quite high. And I have a feeling with a player like that, that I think somebody higher up the division will probably think, yeah, we could maybe take a punt on him. I could see him sort of going to an Everton or an Arsenal and sitting on the bench maybe. I think the prospect for him of maybe...
I don't think Everton have got any money left, have they?
Well, probably not. And they're going to have to... Has it James Rodriguez? Although they are trying to offload about five first-team players, aren't they? Including Sigurdsson and Delph and Walcott and all those boys. So there's a big overhaul trying to happen. But I could see Benrahma maybe even being one of those deals that gets done right on deadline day, where Brentford will just hold out for the best bid they can. I think it's 50-50 at very best. I think Smith has maybe put his eggs in the Watkins basket, so to speak.
Yeah.
Think he probably feels he's more what we need right now.
Phil, if you could choose out of one of the Brentford boys, who would you go with?
I'd go with Watkins. I mean...
Yeah, same.
Benrahma to me, I mean, it's one of those ones, if we really wanted him and he was a key target, would have had him last season, would have had him, would already had him this window. I mean, I think a bit like Eze that went to Crystal Palace, I think he maybe wants to stay in London. I think it's just, right, that's it. He's going to stay in London. So it's which London team can scrape together the pennies to buy him. And yeah. West Ham look to be, they've sold, pretty good winger to the Baggies and Dean Gana there. So they've sold him for round about 20 million. And they think that 20 million will get Benrahma done. But I think it's going to go higher than that.
Yeah, I think, Benrahma, if he gets injured or if his mind's not in it, he just will become another Yannick Bolasie, who can be sensational on clips and highlights, but also can, be totally ineffective and potentially labelled as a luxury player, which, can we afford that at the moment? I think if we had a stronger first 11, then he would be like a bit of icing on the cake, so to speak.
I look at Benrahma and I think for the money you're going to spend, I personally don't think he's a banker in the Premier League. That's not to say he's not a good player. Clearly he's got assets that would work, and I think if you put him into a good team, he'd probably flourish, but I don't necessarily think he's going to, the cliche, can he do it on a cold, wet night at Stoke? It's that kind of thing. I don't see a player who's going to be consistent enough to push Villa up into the next level they want to be at this season.
I think Watkins has more of a role to play in terms of that.
Yeah, all of a sudden, you're buying players to fit into a system, aren't you? Last year we went and bought quantity. We've built a squad. The basis is there to a point. Now it's about fulfilling certain roles in the right way. And if Benrahma isn't, a priority, then so be it. You have to let him go. you know, you're gonna have to walk away from deals. You know, they walked away from the Maupai deal, didn't they, last summer because they didn't think he was worth the money.
Right, Callum Wilson, here's somebody that we kind of fancied, but that looks like it's fallen through by the wayside.
Yeah, it looks like he's joining Mr. Bruce up in Newcastle.
I think our conclusion was if you can get him under 20 mil.
Yeah, good bit of business.
Good bit of business in terms of a Villa will start to have something that resembles a squad of strikers. But, I mean, it raises a question. I mean, maybe there's two points here. The first point is Aston Villa as a entity an attractive proposition if somebody is choosing Newcastle above us, which is a team with their current ownership, which is in a state of flux and uncertainty, and has a unhappy fan base. So that's a big question, because Project Aston Villa maybe is not so enticing. But there's also the factor that he's a big Coventry man and
hates us.
he publicly says he's hated us. So if he wants to be a petty prick, then good luck to him with the Toon Army.
And enjoy winters up north. If someone doesn't want to play for you, so be it. We, you know, we've seen what Perslow's like, and that Smith and him have walked away from various deals before. I think they would have known, we think he's worth this. We're not going to go over that.
Yeah.
The ball's in your court, and if you don't want to come here, fine. I think Smith's primary target would be someone like Watkins, ultimately someone who he's worked with. So it would be, well, we'll take take a punt on Wilson. If we get him, great. If we don't, so be it.
Yeah, I was hoping it would be both, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
What about the old Celtic boy? I think he...
Edouard.
I think he would... prefer, you know, maybe going to a Champions League club.
I think so. I mean, it's really difficult, isn't it?
Although the Premier League is the Premier League, you know.
In terms of money, yeah.
When you're playing in Scotland.
Well, yeah. Again, it's another one of these ones where, you know, he looks a good player, but I don't necessarily think he's a banker. You know, he's banging in goals for fun in Scotland, but then so did Scott Sinclair.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually quite like the look of him, but I think for the price, isn't it about 40 million reportedly? Yeah. I think that it seems very high for a player in the Scottish Premier League, to be honest. I think Celtic either know that he's a real potential superstar in the ilk of like a Van Dijk when he was there, or they're just trying to, you know, fulfill a financial black hole, as we mentioned earlier, from them not being in the Champions League.
Yeah, I think, and I don't agree with this, I'm just talking about a way of thinking. Is I'm thinking that Villa think, well, Wesley's coming back, and he is was a marquee signing, and this boy would be a similar gamble, I would say. And I think they were starting to get a tune out of Wesley, so they would... when there was that rumour about Brewster, Liverpool's Brewster, potentially coming our way on loan, I wrote an article saying that you could see a bit of a logic there in terms of getting in a loan player, like a talented loan player like he is, just to be that cover security for, you know, Wesley, so you don't need to rush him back. So you've got him covered. Obviously, you're getting, you know, Watkins or whoever else, but also getting somebody to cover Wesley, even if, you know, just to January, for example, so then at least you can ease Wesley in properly.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think Wesley is deserving of his chance. You know, I don't necessarily think we can just go and outright replace him straight away. I think that would send out a pretty bad message.
Yeah, I mean, you just bought Samatta, so I don't see Villa going big on a striker in terms of dropping 40 million, or circa 40 million. I can see them getting in Watkins and then maybe something else, but either it would be a loan or something that has gives them a different option in some way.
I think Edouard, if he's still there in the last week of the window and we failed everywhere else, we're going to give Celtic that 40 million for him. I think he's very much going to be the backup plan.
I'd be interested to know if it's just Villa in for him, or if there's, you know, if it's a bit of a bidding war or what. I haven't sort of seen too much. I'm trying not to, you know, delve too deep into the transfer.
I think it's us and Leicester.
Vortex.
Yeah, into the vortex. I mean, I think it's one of those at the moment where if Leicester want a player, I think you're going to go there, especially obviously with the Brendan Rodgers factor that I'd imagine he'd have played under him before, wouldn't he? I think obviously they're going to play in Europe, and I wonder if, as David said, you know, if he could maybe leave Scotland, he might even go into the European market and get a move.
But I don't know if they would fork out that cash at this time. I think overpriced.
That's the British market, isn't it, in general?
Yeah, there's a rumour as well about a buy-on clause that if out of 40 million, Celtic would only get 24 out of that. So that's how bad the buy-on clause is.
Which would explain why they're putting the money up that high.
Mm-hmm.
Right, anybody else?
Yeah, we've been linked with Nicholas Eliasson from Bristol City. We would have played against him in our last season in the championship there, but he's had a decent season there. He's had 12 assists and just 18 league starts, 24 Swedish. So easy link to make there with Lang, you know, Scandinavian league. He's maybe knows a bit about him there. But it, again, it's one of these ones when they just appear out of nowhere, you think to yourself that there might be something in that. You know, he could be a good like backup player, a good squad player to sort of slot in behind Trezeguet on the left.
But are we building a team that's actually going to who has set the world on fire in this second season? I think there's natural improvement just because, you know, players are getting familiar with each other and, you know, they're a year wiser because a lot of them were young. As we saw, you know, there were several improvements in the restart period, but don't we need tried and tested? Everton getting Rodriguez in is like a massive statement that kind of gets fans frothing at the mouth. Does Nicholas Alisson from Bristol City do that after you've signed, you know, a championship fullback and potentially a championship forward?
I think you're looking at, you know, in the transfer window, you can have one or two, can't you? You can have the savvy kind of buy that works out, and we all want those. And certainly from a business point of view, that seems to be the way Purslow wants to go. But at some point, you do need the marquee signing. I think you need to make a statement, and I know that's very difficult in the current market and generally in the Premier League and where we sit in the, you know, in the food chain. But it would be nice to think Villa could actually go out and get a signing that makes the fans go, "Oh wow, we really mean business here."
Yeah, because I think, you know, there'll be gradual improvement. But what did we hear from John McGinn? You know, quite saying, yeah, the owners spoke to us and said, yeah, we're going to bring in, quality is what they're saying. Like, we're going to have a proper go in terms of challenging for anything specifically, but just to, get that ambition fired up and, you know, fast track improvement in the Premier League. Not like, you know, well, hopefully in five seasons we'll be in the top half. I mean, that's of no interest to anybody. So you've got to show genuine strides forward.
No, I mean, you look, obviously we've mentioned it a few times, but you look at sort of the recruitment that the Wolves went down, for example. You know, they were buying multiple Portuguese international players who'd been at established teams over there. And, you know, they bought guys who were a little bit more established, that little bit older, who, you know, they were more than Premier League ready. So when they arrived, they hit the ground running. And, you know, people like Rui Patricio and, you know, the lad in the middle of the park. Obviously, they bought Neves when they were in the championship. They bought a really high quality team. I mean, they are an example really to so many Premier League sides of a side who, relatively lean and mean, got their recruitment absolutely bang on the money.
Right, anyway, we will see what transpires in the next week. I think things will start to pick up now as the start of the season gets closer. So there may be I don't know if it's wishful thinking, there may be a bit of a machine gun effect coming up in terms of transfers. Right, speaking of right backs, now it's time for underrated or overrated. This is where we look back on Villa players from recent history and kind of reevaluate them in the context of what they did while they were at Villa and give them a under or overrated. This doesn't necessarily mean they're a bad player or a great player. It's just how we actually see them, and you've got to make a case for them being underrated or overrated. There are no in-betweens, Mr. Budd. There's no slightly.
I'm not saying anything.
There's no little bit. Right then, first one, who do you want to go for, Mr. Gary Charles or Luke Young?
Should we start with Gary Charles?
Yeah, why not? First question, why did we sign Gary Charles?
Well, we bought him, he was another one of the early Brian Little signings, wasn't he, when he'd just come in and wanted to, you know, transform the system. I remember at the time, obviously, it would have been Earl Barrett would have been on his way out and off to, he went to Everton, didn't he, if I remember rightly?
Yeah.
I think he was only a 1.4 million signing from Derby. We bought Tommy Johnson as well. So, but it was obviously little sort of initial stages of playing through at the back and, you know, the bringing in the wing backs, which at the time were a very different way of playing. So we wanted, you know, mobile fullbacks who could get forward. El Barrett was much more of a defensive player and he wanted Charles to kind of bomb on. You know, and obviously had Alan Wright going down the other side who arrived a few weeks after, I believe. They're both signed at a similar time, and then they became the mainstays in those wide positions for a couple of years, really. Obviously, Charles had got the injury in his, I think it was in his second season at Villa, but for that first full season he was at Villa, he was, you know, superb through that Coca-Cola Cup winning team.
Yeah, he was just solid. It's like what we're saying before. I mean, you didn't need to think about the right back position. You didn't need to think who was playing it. So Gary Charles is the right back. It's just funny, his most famous sort of memory, despite winning the League Cup with Villa, his most famous moment was being the one that got fouled by Gazza in the cup final. Then when Gazza did his cruciate, I mean, that was...
This was while he was at Forest, and this all took place during the 1991 FA Cup final, which Spurs ended up winning 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, the first foul by Gazza was another soon-to-be Villa player. I mean, he nearly put his boot through Gary Parker's chest for the first foul, and then the second one that he did, he took out Gary Charles. I mean, if you go onto YouTube and just look, you can see those two tackles. I mean, they're hard
to
watch now,
aren't they?
Yeah, they're awful.
Do you think Gary Charles was better going forward than he was defensively?
I would say he was pretty even, because in terms of what you'd see in the modern game, I wouldn't say it was like a cavalier. You know, you look at the way sort of like, you know, like Carl Walker's played over the last, you know, good few seasons, or like Alexander Arnold. He wasn't that. He wasn't like lightning. He was just very solid and he could get forward. I don't think he was quite such a flair player as some of the modern fullbacks you get. But of that era, I think he was something a little bit different.
Yeah.
In that he could kind of do both. I think it also probably helped that he would have had any one of, you know, Southgate, Ekyogu, or McGrath in that centre period, and he had a very strong midfield playing around him. So he was just playing in a very good side that was very well drilled.
And how did it kind of go wrong for him in terms of him falling out of favour at Villa, do you think?
Well, he'd got the horrible injury, didn't he, at the end of that? I think we'd obviously won the cup, and then it was in the April of that season, I think it was against West Ham, if I remember rightly, and I think he snapped his ankle, didn't he? It was a horrific, really, really nasty injury, and I think he missed virtually all of the next year, and Villa had brought in Fernando Nelson.
The mighty Fernando Nelson.
So by the time he'd got back in the side, he wasn't necessarily like, you know, first name on the team sheet, so to speak. And then into the following season, he regained his place again in 97-8. And I think when Gregory came in, maybe it was that transition between Little and Gregory, and he didn't quite fancy Charles as much. He still had a couple of moments, managed to stick around the next season when Villa were flying, you know, pretty high, and he actually had a really good season that year. I remember he scored a couple of goals from the fullback, but then once Steve Watson came in, I think he found himself just slipping down the pecking order, and I think his time was up then, and then he ended up going to Benfica.
Yeah.
And strangely, actually ended up ending his career at Blues. You know, he left Villa and then he barely kicked a ball. You know, he barely played at Benfica, didn't play many games at West Ham, and I think he made like two appearances for Birmingham. And I think this was in the era when his personal life was quite publicly, you know, falling apart. I know he'd had problems at home, and these problems with alcohol had really come to the fore by that point. And obviously, unfortunately for him, he had a couple of stints in prison, didn't he?
Yeah, I think they were pretty much linked, his kind of downfall on the pitch to what was happening. It was like a soap opera off the pitch. Where was he last seen?
On a brighter note, he's now a sports ambassador for Delamere Rehab Clinic. So, you know, he's helping other people to get over the things that sort of, with the demons that he had in his life. So, you know, there is some good to come out of it there. So it's a happy note to end on for him.
Yeah, and he went back to Forest briefly, didn't he? I think he was one of the coaches in the coaching staff for a while. So he kind of went full circle with his career, but he obviously never either had the profile as a player to go in to be a manager. I think he did a bit of non-league stuff and coaching, yeah. But he never had the gravitas to go into the higher echelons of management and, you know, be at a league side or anything like that.
Right. Anyway, let's cast our verdict. Gary Charles, underrated or overrated?
I'm going to go a little bit underrated. Because I don't remember him ever letting anybody down.
He's there with his little bit again.
Yeah. I think because he didn't cost, admittedly, obviously he was in a cheaper market then, but he didn't cost a fortune. I think he was solid and a dependable player. And I think he gains favour by the fact that he actually, you know, he won a trophy. His performances actually resulted in something.
Phil, over or underrated?
No, it has to be underrated as well. I mean, if you're a solid part of a very good side. No complaints with him at all.
He was a, you know, proper right back that could bomb on, had a bit of pace that, you know, served a back three very well. So I'll say underrated as well. Right, on to the second under or over. Mr. Luke Young. Why did we sign him?
Well, the simple answer is we needed a right back.
We didn't have one.
No.
Was it Nigel Riococca?
Or was it Olaf Melberg?
It probably would have been Melberg, actually, at the time, wouldn't it? Or Carlos Cuellar, perhaps.
Yeah, even Martin O'Neill said when they signed him, the right-back position caused us a few problems.
Polite way of putting it.
The last season, in terms of us not having a natural right-back. I mean, I always remember that season before. Like, how do you start a season without a right-back? How do you start a season without a recognised natural position, you know, one position missing, and you're a bloody Premier League team?
Well, this was a team that had budget. It wasn't like, oh, we're having to save money left, right and centre, or we have problems. It was like they weren't short of, you know, if they needed to do it, they could go out and buy someone.
Yeah, so it was always a bit odd. It was almost like here you are, you know, Martin O'Neill, he's going to take you to the promised land, allegedly, of Champions League football, and you decide, well, actually, we haven't, you know, we failed to get a right back in, so we'll just go for it.
Go for it we did. When you look at the transfer fee as well, I mean, the season before, Middlesbrough had signed him for $2.5 million and we paid $6 million, which raised eyebrows at the time, still does.
I mean, it was the money that got it over the line. It was similar to Darren Bent, where you've got a player that has doing well at the club, or they've just been bought and they're, you know, they've still got 3 or 4 years to run on their contract, and in the natural scheme of things would not be sold. But as Luke Young said himself subsequently, in the end, moving probably suited everyone. I was 29 and they offered very good money for me, and I don't blame Steve Gibson for taking it. It was close to $6 million with add-ons, so he made the right decision. I think he said in an ideal world, he would have, you know, stayed at Middlesbrough because, you know, he was kind of enjoying it there. But Villa, we also got Nicky Shorey in at the same time for the left-back position. And in terms of Luke Young, you're thinking, well, he's an England international, be it a bit part international. And he had a reasonable reputation at Charlton. I mean, he was a Spurs youth product, but mainly made his name at Charlton, you know, when they were actually probably having the best time of their recent history, until they got relegated, and then he had to go to Borough. But, you know, in terms of your memories, I think it was his first season was probably his best season, really. 2008/09.
Yeah, he was good in that first season. I mean, that was, it probably was the one of the best version of the O'Neill sides, really, that year. They were really, really well drilled, and that was the year where they had Melberg and Larsson, didn't they, right at the heart of the defence, if I remember rightly, and they were both...
Oh, was this the season that Larsson played an actual season?
I believe so, yeah. And Young was, you know, he was getting forward, and he was, you know, he looked like a... They'd finally sort of, you know, solved the problems that they'd obviously had the previous season with them by having a proper fullback. But, you know, the season after, you know, he sat on the bench in the cup final. And if I remember rightly, that's this following season, he'd kind of been called up to lots of England squads, but he never got a look in when he would just go and train, but he was never involved. So I think he'd rejected, I think it would have been Capello at the time. He'd rejected a call up to the squad. And his career just never quite came back from that for whatever reason, whether it was confidence or what, I don't know.
But he hadn't actually played for England since 2005. And his final appearance in an England squad was a friendly against Spain in February 2009. So that's his first season at Villa, isn't it? And then it wasn't announced then. I think it was announced in November. So you're talking about the next season, 2009/2010, that he'd actually retired, and he'd actually retired back in February, and he said it was for personal reasons.
Yeah, he mentioned it. He just said it was becoming a bit of a joke, that he was always, you know, he was getting called up to these squads, but he wasn't getting a look in, and I think in the end he was like, this is pointless.
Yeah.
You know, he would have been behind the likes of Gary Neville and Michael Richards, and there were other players in the pecking order. So I think he just thought, I know where I am in the grand scheme of things here. I'm not going to get a look in. You know, count me out. I think it was that, you know, old cliche of, well, I want to prolong my club career. But, you know, the following season, he'd been knocked out of the Villa side by Carlos Cuellar.
Yeah, but he also was in a situation where he played 16 games, after playing 34, which is like most of the games, his first season. He played 16, then 23 and 2. And when suddenly Cuellar's preferred to at right back, I think he made a few appearances playing left back when Boomer got injured, and Nicky Shorey just had his confidence shot to shit. So he was playing out of position there, and finally we had the solution. Well, we had a natural right back. I don't know if he was the solution. And then suddenly O'Neill prefers to have that extra height and physicality in Cuellar at right backs, mainly for, you know, defensive purposes, because Cuellar over the halfway line wasn't really going to do much for you. You know, you look at our fullbacks now, and you would take Gilbert and Elmo over him in terms of once he's crossed the halfway line.
Yeah, it's a problem we've seemed to have struggled with, you know, consistently down the years for whatever reason.
Well, you look at the teams that are getting the Champions League nowadays, and it's all about, as I mentioned earlier, all about the fullbacks.
It's become a real key position, hasn't it, now?
And you can just laugh at Martin O'Neill's fullbacks, and you could actually put that down as one of the reasons we never did crack the top four underneath, you know, with him. Would you say that's a fair point?
Yeah, definitely. It's just another of his many flaws that he probably can't attribute to himself, but that he... You know, he would probably say, oh, we need to get a checkbook out. We need to buy another fullback in the window, or another fullback in the summer. But because I remember any time seeing Cuellar there, I mean, if he got the ball, he sort of looked up. I mean, he didn't have the pace to even carry the ball forward. He just sort of sent it down the wing and hoped for the best. I mean, he was lucky probably that he had Galway up there in his pump, yeah, that he could chase after a ball into the corner.
It's a shame in that respect that Villa had, you know, no development in terms of fullbacks coming through.
Well, we had Habib Bey on Megabooks sat doing nothing, didn't we, as well?
Yeah, and he was also a potential right-back as well. And it shows you there's no real continuity or long-term planning, because you get a Luke Young in, then you should have somebody, a young chap, being groomed to, you know, replace him, because obviously Young came in when he was 29, so you're going to get a couple of maybe two or three seasons out of him. But if you've got somebody, a younger player, rather than a Habib Bey, you know, soaking up ridiculous wages, then you've got some kind of semblance of progress and planning. But it, you know, as we saw, it all fell to shit.
Yeah, and because I remember when he left Villa, he I think he ended up at QPR, but he had the option to go to Liverpool. Liverpool had offered a relatively low fee, and he actually turned the move down.
Yeah, I think it's 2.5 million.
Yeah, because he knew he wasn't going to play, which, with all due respect to the guy, you have a little bit of sort of respect for him by, at least he was A, realistic, and B, actually, you know, he wanted to play. He didn't just want the big move to say he went to play for Liverpool, knowing that he'd just be twiddling his thumbs most of the time.
But the irony was, he hardly played after that.
No. His career nosedived, didn't it, for whatever reason?
Yeah, no, it's a bit of an odd one, how it's almost like, you know, he got his big move for Villa, and it probably softened his appetite a little bit once his bank account filled up. I mean, you could say that's one possibility. I mean, his attitude with England... is another clue there as well, where he's just thinking, well, what's the point? Rather than, as a footballer, wanting to better yourself and, you know, maybe learn off people you're with, etc.
Or maybe it's just a chronic lack of confidence. You know, some people have just got that fight and the get up and go to say, well, it's going to be a challenge, but I'm going to make the best of this. I mean, you compare him to, like, another, you know, infamous Villa right back in Alan Hutton. You know, he had a torrid time at Villa for a number of years, but he just stuck with it and rode through the crap. Came out the other side, you know, a real fan's favourite. And sometimes you have to do that, whereas it says a lot about the people, the players' characters.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Because Hutton, as you said, he was
gone, wasn't he, basically? He was
a couple of,
out,
you know, two or three times he was dead and buried.
And just managed to ride out multiple managers. And, you know, I mean, I admit that seems to be a theme that a lot of Villa players have said when you hear him interviewed about the O'Neill era, is that if you weren't in the team, you were nowhere. Yeah. You know, O'Neill had his 11, and then everyone else was kind of bit part players, which is pretty, you know, shocking man management in that era. When you look at the quantity of the recruitment that O'Neill did, it looks on the outside that he just bought in players to sit there and, you know, take wages, because there were so many of them not featuring regularly.
Yeah. Luke Jung was then sold on to QPR when he was finding it hard to get in the Villa team after saying that he would stay at Villa because it would be easier to get in the Villa team than the Liverpool team. I mean, there was the incident with his half-brother who passed away and was found dead on a building site in Greece, in Crete, Greece, in the period of when he was at Villa in 2009. And that was something that was rattling on his mind because I think he was disappointed that the Greece police didn't seem to be taking it seriously and not investigating it. So, you know, in terms of, you know, mental state, that may have factored in to, you know, his state of mind at the time. And at QPR, he was meant to be going to Reading, but I think he had a hip injury, and that was pretty much where he played his last football. Since he's been... He actually became an agent for a company called Pitch Representation. And you probably remember him popping up in those Star Sixes, that tournament they tried to get going with. I think he played for the England greats with Heskey and Owen. And they were, did they take it? Was it the rest of the world or international stars? I can't remember what they called them, where they had like players like Perez and Okocha. And they would call them the England greats or the England stars. And you'd see Luke Jung and you'd think, they're kind of scratching around a little bit there for England internationals.
No, my abiding memory of Luke Jung is like he had this sort of look about him, about a stare in his eyes. It was a very focused stare. I just remember seeing any time you've seen a picture of him, you just thought he's going to do some damage there, but he didn't translate into that kind of player. It was a very sort of aggressive stare, but on the pitch he wasn't that aggressive at all.
Yeah,
I always got the feeling with him, as you said, it was that real high levels of focus, almost like he had to work very hard just to get the best out of his ability. He wasn't what you'd call like a real natural who made the game look easy.
Under or overrated?
I'm going to say overrated due to the fee and the fact that he was an England international at the time. I mean, if you, at the end of the day, if you're getting displaced by Carlos Cuellar at right back, that sort of says it all at the time, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Phil. I think, you know, if you're getting the option to play for your country and you're rejecting it because you might not get a game, that attitude doesn't stick with me.
Yeah, I'm also thinking if he was making the squad, then we were pretty short in terms of depth of right back, in terms of the English setup anyway. And also after, you know, one season of Villa fans thinking, finally, we've got this right back issue, because it was an issue at the time, solved, for him to then kind of drop off and, as you say, suddenly find himself playing second fiddle to Carlos Cuellar at right back is, you know, potentially there is things off the pitch that may be haunting him, but at the end of the day, we're here to only judge the football on the pitch side of things. So I will say overrated as well. But as an agent now, he can, if you're a footballer, he can help you out with your. It's quite interesting. I've looked at the Pitch Representation website just finally, just to see what agents offer players now. So as well as your contract negotiation, deal brokering, club sourcing, they'll also look after your brand management and sales, media broadcast, digital and social media management, so basically run your Twitter account and Facebook and Instagram. They'll also sort out your wealth management. This is where you get to rip off players, I think. And then act as your concierge and lifestyle was one I thought was quite funny. Maybe Henry Lansbury's with them.
Yeah, that's the role of, can you sort me a table in Ibiza, or can you sort me a private yacht?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Sort of shite.
That would be a good documentary, I think, you know, if Amazon want to get on it.
Got footballers in the off-season.
Behind the scenes at such player representation setups as this, doing the whole
kind of... Amazon presents the super agent behind the scenes with Jorge Mendes.
And Luke Jung. Right, it's time to get out of here as our brains implode on us. Enough of right backs. We can't be speaking about right backs anymore until the season kicks off and we actually see one play, I think. Thank you very much again to all the My Old Man Said patrons in the close season that have signed up, and we look forward to getting going with Match Club again, which will be very much in demand as we'll start the season behind closed doors once again. Please do subscribe to the podcast on all good podcast apps that you listen to, and especially if it's Apple or Spotify. And until next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.